We're going to hear now an interview recorded with Dennis Cormier, founder of the 1000 Voices for Gaza Project. He's in Gaza City, but he will be Skyping into Santa Fe tonight in an event called Connect With and Help the People of Gaza. That's at 5:30 tonight. For more information and directions, you can call 989-5052. I'd like now to welcome Denny Cormier. He is founder of the 1000 Voices for Gaza Project, and he's talking to us from Gaza City via Skype. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
It's good to be with you and good to be talking with somebody from Santa Fe.
Well, you're a Santa Fe, and how did you end up living in Gaza City?
It's a long story, but about 2 years ago, I became much more fascinated with what was happening in the Middle East. I'm a social media person, and I was spending a lot of time on Twitter and on Facebook. And one night, I happened across a tweet that said there was massive bombing going on in Gaza City and throughout Gaza, and I went looking for more information on Twitter. I was used to using live streaming in the United States, and I found the live stream, and that's kind of where it started, watching for 7 days what was happening on the ground, being broadcast by a journalist from the UK who was living in Gaza at the time. He since became a good friend of mine. That experience, and also a few other experiences, including talking to dozens of people in Gaza, I began realizing that what I was seeing in the media and hearing on CNN and things like that wasn't really totally what was happening here. And I wanted to see for myself.
So what did you see on that live stream for 8 days?
It was bombing pretty constantly. I heard these sounds of explosion. The reporter would jump off of his chair from time to time. He happened to actually, coincidentally, be reporting from the same room that I'm sitting in right now in Gaza City. I took an apartment in the same building where he was living in Gaza during that war. So this was basically a Ustream channel where he broadcast from his living room. I did the very same thing this year during the first 2 weeks of the war and attack on Gaza, starting on around July 8th. And eventually, two Palestinian young people began broadcasting from their balcony that overlooked Gaza City. So you could see the explosions. You could see the jets. It was an experience of war that I had never had before.
Talk more about the disconnect between what you saw and what was being broadcast in the media and what you read in print media.
Well, I mean, the primary narrative is that we're dealing with terrorists. The attention for Gaza specifically seems to come only when there is an attack on it, and there have been three of them since 2009. So in 5 years, there was a 14-day, there was an 8-day, and this last was 50 days. But the narrative is that these people are terrorists, that they want nothing but to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. I mean, that's the general narrative. Now, I watched CNN from Gaza during the war this summer. The narrative that was on CNN, and which was the only one I could really watch, and the narrative in the New York Times and others was of this poor country, Israel, who is being attacked with all these rockets. They're just doing what they have to do. There's a different perception when you're on the ground here of those people that might be what you would call militia. They are ordinary people, barbers, plumbers. They're not full-time soldiers. And I've met some of them. Again, no one that I've met have I ever heard any narrative coming from them that they hate Israel or they hate Jews. What they hate is the government, and Netanyahu is not a well-loved man. But I was with Jewish people this summer in Gaza during the war. Max Blumenthal from New York City, Dan Cohen also from New York. Being Jewish is not a problem in Gaza City. The reports in the media said that there was firing from places like hospitals. That wasn't true. I was at El Shifa Hospital for most of the summer, and I saw no signs of that at all. And the other disconnect is the the reality that this is not a third world country. This is a very sophisticated country in many respects. I've not been brainwashed. I see what I see is that the siege and the blockade of this country has done some pretty nasty things.
What do you mean by that?
For instance, if you have a country where people have been unemployed, especially young people coming out of universities, I mean, there are many people that I know who have master's degrees that cannot get a job. There's no work. The industries have been decimated. Even simple industries like the fishing industry, the industries have been bombed so that there's virtually no manufacturing going on. Before 2006, Gaza was a totally different place. Totally different place. Even when the Israelis were here, which were problematic at times, it was a different place economically. So it causes a lot of hardships. For instance, there's a cooking gas shortage right now. Some years back, Israel decided how much cooking gas would get into Gaza based on the size of the population. We have another 800,000 people now living here than when that calculation was done. And so we get half of the cooking gas that's required. We have 30,000 people waiting to leave Gaza now, and the border between Egypt and Gaza has been closed now, except for 2 days over the last 40-some days. It's difficult for me to justify rockets being shot out of this country, which they're not being shot right now, but this is a country that has no other way of defending itself except with brigades of citizen soldiers. What you don't hear in the news are the things that precede those rocket launches. Deaths on the border. You see farmers being shot at and sometimes killed. You see targeted assassinations. These are right on our streets with rockets coming out of drones. People on motorcycles just up the street from me. They were blown to smithereens. No day in court. Much like the drones being used by our country and other countries, if someone is a suspected terrorist, they could be taken out. And I've seen them taken out not very far from my home.
You're doing social media. As you said, you're a social media person. How is social media, in your view, creating awareness outside of Gaza, within Gaza? Do you feel like it's making any difference? Is it helping to create change in any way?
It's social media is a very small part of a very big effort. In this particular attack for 51 days, it's been pretty well reported that the Palestinians had a great advantage over the Israelis in delivering the news by social media. I mentioned the word Facebook at a small party for children today, and that I would be posting some photos of them. And they said, oh, on Facebook, great. It's not an American phenomenon. It's matter of fact, it's the way out of the Middle East for most people who cannot leave this very small area. So many of them have American friends. And so although it really didn't affect the media completely, it did get the news out to people who wanted to know in other countries. So it's doing something. And without it, there would be no way of getting that news out. You know, having more press releases is not the answer, because press releases are sent out daily out of Gaza.
You have said in an interview that you are optimistic about the future of Gaza. And for those of us who are following the situation from here and looking at what seems like a David and Goliath situation, ironically, with Gaza being the little guy, what gives you that sense of optimism?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. Although there are many challenges to the people, education is valued here, everywhere from the grammar school to advanced degrees. I know some of these guys. They're doctors, they're lawyers, they have PhDs. I've attended conferences, I've met some of them in their offices. I don't go make a point of doing that, but it's happened. I've been here 8 months now. And I had that sense before I came here that maybe we were characterizing these people as terrorists because it benefited our situation politically in the Middle East with Israel, etc. I don't know.
What is the 1,000 Voices for Gaza project?
It's an idea that I had that There were people on the ground doing social media work for resistance purposes, for informational purposes, with people, you know, and communicating with people outside of Gaza. I thought it would be a great benefit not only for resistance, but also for future development of Gaza, if more people were trained in using social media for other than its originally intended purpose, which is being social. If people could be helped with language skills, people could be encouraged to write their stories. So I approached the government here when they asked me what I would like to be doing while I'm in Gaza, and I gave them about a 30-page overview of the project. And we've been holding classes, workshops, many informal gatherings like over coffee or tea with young people just discussing what you can do with social media. And I try to be an example of that because I do my own work every day from Gaza, telling stories about what I see, taking many, many photographs and sharing those with about 12,000 people right now.
Denny Cormier is founder of the 1,000 Voices for Gaza Project. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's my pleasure, and I hope that we have a chance to speak again in the future. Thanks so much, Mary Charlotte.
And once again, this interview was recorded a couple of days ago with Denis Cormier. He will be speaking tonight in an event called Connect With and Help the People of Gaza. He will actually be Skyping in from Gaza City. It's at 5:30. For more information and location of the event, you can call 989-5052. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to the Radio Cafe.